Now we enter on third market entry strategy, which is licensing. Firms of one country. Now licensing is like one country firm, you know, say firm in India, have a right, you know, to use its intellectual property and pass that right to another firm in another country. Okay. So I know that this my way of working, or this way of producing, or the process that I have determined, or the material control, if I have the manufacturing, if I teach to the other person in other part of the world, he also can produce similar quality. Now if that happens, like in Domino's pizzas or Pizza Huts, etc., you see, irrespective of various outlets you go, you find that taste and, you know, flavors, etc., very, very similar. Now that is because somebody has acquired that skill sets, which is what you call intellectual property right, also comes into information in literacy, etc., many ways. But here, somebody who got that skill set now wants to capitalize, and he can pass this on to somebody at a fees known as a royalty. So you get a some amount, which is a royalty payment. Under this license, firm can product and market products under licensing company's brand. So if McDonald's US has given a license to firm in India, then that firm can use the McDonald's license across. So that's one eligibility under the licensing. You are also able to enter a foreign market without committing substantial resources. In fact, you are earning. Okay. So you are only passing on the skill set. You are only passing on the intelligent part. You are only just giving them the way of working, etc. Rest is that person's risk. You are only recovering your royalty payment any which ways. So that's a very smart move, as they say. No transportation costs, cross-border tariffs, all these things are not involved if you enter into a licensing this thing. Unless you have certain specific things, that the material has to be purchased, or, you know, essence or the secret composition or formulation has to be, you know, imported, then you might have. Local resources utilizations is not your botheration. What efficiency with which is working, you are not really bothered about, because you are either recovering your royalty, you recovered substantial portion by way of a first royalty. Overall cost can be contained. You don't have to really invest in entire infrastructure building, etc. So your cost and investment will be bare minimum. Risk is minimized because you are not sharing the loss related risk. Okay, you are already getting your money back. If that unit fails, maybe you can restart with somebody else. So that much only a market opportunity loss will happen, but not a significant loss for you. License can prove to be, he may become future. So that's one negative of it. Tomorrow he has acquired the skill set that you have provided in the manufacturing, art, etc. He may become tomorrow your competition by separating from you. So that's about, say, licensing. The brother of licensing is the franchising. Okay. Licensing has its own inbuilt limitations. Licensing, doesn't go beyond just giving the way of working and the branding, etc. What used to happen, the success on terms of selling, success due to efficient marketing, etc., was not, you know, assured to the person who took the license, etc. So the risk involved is very high. So there was another model which got, which is franchising. It's a method for expanding the business the way the licensing is done. Here you are giving, you are allowing somebody else to use your trademark, your method of working, your process, etc. You will support him with various other things, and then you are allowing him to set up things in licensing versus in the franchising. You know, in licensing, after you acquire a license, you gave whatever the royalty, etc. Suppose to become efficient, I as a licensor has a very sound order tracking, or sound IT and sound application that I have my program on. Now you want that, then again I will charge you additional. You say, ke bhai, you please train my people, I will again have a charge additional. So that was another aspect of licensing. But in franchising, you are supposed to support your franchisee all through. So that's a one big differentiator for the franchisee. So here, franchisor is the one who owns the property, who owns the art of making, who has the process, in his hand. He's one who gives a license to the other firm, who's known as a franchisee, who operates under the brand, gives you the required infrastructure, acquires required number of people, adheres to your process. So McDonald's franchisee in, say, Dadar, Bandra, they will have the same equipment, they will have process known how to produce, one particular pizza, etc., or how to have the finger chips produced so deliciously, etc. So that, but of course, the Domino's takes not only the ownership of just giving the manufacturing art, but train people, their entire IT of order registration, all those things are also being provided. People are trained by the Domino's worldwide group, etc. Agreement covers all products, specific category that you can decide, what it covers, what it doesn't cover. So that's a franchisee operation. Post agreement, when you sign in, between the two party, franchisor provides all kind of know-how, be it process, be it support, be it IT, be it training, etc. Franchisee has to pay two kinds of payment. One is one time, which is when you are entering into a agreement, and second could be continuing fees, which you call a royalty fees, McDonald's. So every then, while you are taking a franchisee this thing, you pay one time amount, okay, which is known as a franchisee fee. Then every year or whatever the periodic cycle, whatever that profit or this thing that has been made, towards that you will get a royalty fees. Franchisee have complete freedom. So the guy who took your franchise have complete freedom to operate, be efficient, be effective, etc. He depends on you, your sales support, marketing support, but he can also do it independently. However, he has to follow the guideline. Okay, he cannot do a different communication. So if he has to release an ad, he has to take your advisory and then go ahead and release ads. He cannot talk about your pizza differently. Okay, you have created one particular position. He cannot counter that. So that's what is a code of conduct between franchisor and franchisee. Then comes the simple aspects of exporting. Now here onwards, the risk is lower, reward is also lower. Okay, in exporting, you manufacture the goods and you sold it to the other party in the country of your choice, where you think there is a good market for your kind of product. Okay, two parties involved. One is an exporter, you are a manufacturer, you decided that you will sell it in Sri Lanka, so you become an exporter. The other party on the other end who receives your good is an importer in Sri Lanka. Okay, there can be a direct exports and there can be an indirect exports. Direct exports means as an exporter who is also an importer, knows who is the importer, he exactly can identify who has got the material. Okay, the direct export is, I know the end user of the product, I know who's my customer. Okay, so then when I'm selling that to a customer who's a final user himself, then that's a direct exports. In a direct exports also, it's like a well-versed with the foreign country, to get into direct exports, you should know the country very well, you should know the market, you should know the composition of the market, you should know who all are competing there, etc. You should know the normal trading pattern out there, how's the indirect export network, that's the distribution channel works, what are the financial terms of working in those countries, what is the credit system, the legal system is the most to protect your interest. So that's a need of a direct exporters. In the indirect exports, exporter doesn't know who is a final consumer, because he's selling it to either agent or a distributor domestically. The someone who domestically procures the goods, and he may either export to other country or he will find customers to use your product. So that's a choice. So when I do an indirect export to Sri Lanka, I know that Mr. XYZ, but I also know that he is not a user. He is either an agent, he is acting as either agent or he is acting as a party or a distributor, or he is just a procurer for me. He acquires goods from me. then either he further exports it or he finds the customers and sells it at a price that he thinks is the best that he can recover, which otherwise I cannot. So that's the indirect exports. Again, like an indirect export also, you have to take care of various other parameters that I told you for the direct exports also. So markets, the competition, the network system, how the distribution taking place, potential threats, etc. Various things you need to know. Government of every country encourages exports as it brings available needed foreign currency. Government of various country always encourages export because you get a foreign currency in return that makes your foreign reserves attractive. So that's about exporting. Now we'll have another market entry strategy. This is management contract. Somewhere between exporting using agents, distributors, or your own export office, etc., and a joint venture, this comes somewhere in between, where is a risk which is lower than the moderate level, not absolutely low. A reward is also accordingly little less than the moderate rate of return gives you. Here, however, there are various compulsions which needs you to consider this. Firm at the home country outsources the complete operation control of the function that he is looking at to the another firm, okay, either to an individual or to a organizations which supports him with the required manpower and the equipment infrastructure, provides the required deliverables. Finally, to get the required deliverables, Dell and various other companies have an outsource BPO, KPO, whatever you say, the call center operation, wherein those companies have a complete infrastructure in terms of building the tables, the people, entire software, this thing that allows the inward and call and recording of calls and various things, and the giving a productivity table wise and whatnot. So that's what is a outsource. So same way in the manufacturing also it happens. You see the bottlers or the Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, etc. It is not that they manufacture this in US and import or export worldwide. You have a bottlers here also in this country, but the concentrate and those things come to them, which is a secret formula. Later, how to bottle it, that has been taught to them. So through such this thing, in many other industries, this is possible. What you call a management contract. Such contracts are exhaustive in nature. They are, of course, elaborate in terms of disclosures, non-disclosures, responsibility, roles, risks, liabilities, and whatnot. So there to be contract. So everything is laid down threadbare. Such outsourcing is popular. More popular so in a staff function, like as you say, the payroll outsourcing or HR outsourcing, IT outsourcing, etc., training outsourcing, that kind of thing, where it's like I am also like from the training industry. So training is outsourced by, say, automobile company to us. So we take care of complete responsibility of getting nomination, deputing trainer, and ensuring the planned adherence to the training need of organization is met. So that's what is a management contract outsourcing. It allows companies to focus on what is outsource. So that is where this particular line comes in. Naturally, there is something in the every organization that something is a core thing, core objective, core purpose, core process, task, etc. Others are secondary, supportive. Also make or buy, something which if you do may cost you something. Somebody, if it is outsourced, means if you give it to an expert, it may cost you less. Something which may, if you outsource, may allow you to focus on your core, this thing. So that's what this particular thing. Outsource something which is supplementary in nature, not core to you, and allow your focus to be on the core thing. Rest everything is outsourced. Outsourcing may require lot of sensitive information, shared with the party who's your associate, who's going to be your management contract consultant, so to say. A lot of information has been shared with them. Therefore, the non-disclosure agreement, agreements are very rugged, supposedly. However, the risk is you are vulnerable to fraud, insider trading, poaching of employees, etc., financial irregularities and all, because there, people have not much of a connect with your company. Even the promoter out there many times resort to things which is unhealthy for you. Okay, so that kind of a problem that outsourcing management out contract faces. We enter into now understanding various other market entry strategies. One is a turnkey projects. Turnkey projects is essentially a time-bound this thing. It is not a long-term market entry this thing. It's a legal understanding where under a particular contract, a firm agrees to fully design, construct, equip a manufacturing business or a service facility and turn around the project over to the purchaser when it is ready for operation, for a remuneration, constructing the bridge, or say constructing the dam, constructing your entire manufacturing facility. Okay, so that kind of thing you outsource. So now say like our company, like L&T, Hindustan Construction Companies, etc., they do this in other countries and on foreign exchange. They do it in Afghanistan, they do it in Bangladesh, they do it in European countries. So that's what the turnkey project is all about, strategic alliances. This is really interesting relationship is with relationship in which two parties or two entities enter into a kind of an understanding where they will share the resources of each other to achieve mutually beneficial objective. Mutually beneficial objective is a prime consideration. You will wonder what is different between joint venture and this. The joint venture is like you really enter into a full-fledged entity. You become an entity when you come together. Here you may not become an entity in itself, but you utilize each other's skill sets and infrastructure to develop the business. So that's how you enter into a strategic alliance. You see, if I had to give you an example, it leverages to gain the competitive advantage or challenge the leader. And this happens airline industry. Jet Airways was with Etihad Airways, or even I think Indigo, I think, is with some KLM, or maybe say assume Etihad. Why this? They call it a strategic alliance with this. So say for example, Jet Airways, Indigo has a no long range Boeings, which can have 8 or 10 hours of flight. Now in that case, they enter into a strategic alliance with say Etihad, just for the example. In that case, the customer booking a ticket through Jet Airways for say London via Abu Dhabi, then Jet Airways responsibility is to leave them at the Abu Dhabi airport. From there, the same customer on the same ticket through an Etihad Airways will go to London. There is a back-end understanding of revenue sharing. So that's how the now it gives the Jet Airways an access to millions of customers going to London. Okay, Etihad Airways also through Jet Airways gets the Indian customer using Etihad Airways to reach London. So you see, it's a benefit to both parties. So that's how the strategic alliance take place. They leverage each other's strengths, resources, employees, many times network, to create that strong reason to survive together and grow the market in a very dynamic competitive market. Useful to enter foreign market, it allows you an entry into foreign market, many times counter the monopoly and thereby minimize your risk, capture the future growth. If you enter into a good strategic alliance, you will be able to garner best of the future. Responsibilities and accountability are clearly defined, and thus each party has a complete clarity. What is his role? What does it have to bring? What does he have to increase to maximize his revenue from that strategic alliance, etc.? Objective could be different. There can be a different reason why you enter into strategic alliance. It could be purely economic. It could be scale. It could be leverage to utilize each other's infrastructure, which is already there. So putting the existing infrastructure to a productive use. So the example that I gave you, Etihad or Jet Airways versus Indigo, Jet Airways or Indigo and Etihad, or say Jet Airways, Etihad or KLM, is that only where the infrastructure is utilized. So you get more business, so you are able to turn around, you are able to have more flights per aircraft. Many other example like Alwyn and Nissan. Nissan entered into a contract with Alwyn and they developed at that point of time various vehicles. This company is no more there. Microsoft and TCS. So TCS has that competency in the IT, etc. So they have entered into that and they leverage each other's strategic resources to create that impactful and remain impactful in the market. Then comes the agent and distributor. This is like kind of the lowest rung entry level strategy. Very minimal risk and minimal revenue. You probably get a marginal share of large foreign market. Agent will find, so there is a difference in their each other's role and responsibility. An agent will find a customer for the client. Agent, suppose the agent in Sri Lanka, I decide that Mr. So-and-so will be my agent in Sri Lanka. His role is to find a customer for my product, but he will not be responsible for the quality and delivery of the goods. He doesn't own any responsibility. He will find customers, but if any damage to the goods and any quality questions by the customers, he do not get himself responsible. Order by exporter is received from the agent. Agent passes on the order. Okay. But later goods are directly sent or supplied to the customer. Invoice on to importer and receivables are also monitored by the exporter. So here also for the payment and all, agent does not come into picture. The risk is yours. Okay. Agency may operate for several exporters. So now in this case, the one who is an agent will operate for several exporters. Several exporters, each may be of a different domain. Some of them may be conflicting with you. Okay. So there may be a conflict of interest. Because agent's role is to, he has to maximize his earning. Okay, now he will not necessarily bound to reveal unless your contractual obligation want him to reveal to you other competing brand or the product that he's already dealing in. Okay, in international trade, there is another kind of a agent, namely Dell Credit Agent. They give the guarantee to client in terms of adherence of the contract by third party, that is the customer. They give that part of a guarantee they take. He agrees to take the steps to comply with the agreement that you have entered vis-a-vis the client. So he ensures that those compliances are met, okay, but do not guarantee that end result will be as expected by you. So he is like a compliance monitor, okay. They seek higher commission because to some extent they hold the accountability. So they seek higher commission. So that's another form of an agent. Then comes the distributor. He is also like a third party in the foreign country where you want to deal in. However, the major difference is distributor takes the ownership of the goods. The invoice is invoiced onto the distributor. He buys the goods from you. Okay. So the payment you receive is from the distributor, not from the third party who is an actual final consumer. He is responsible, therefore, for the goods purchase, the damage on site that happens to him on the goods, unsold goods due to market conditions, etc., as well as the receivables from the customers and all, his whole liability belongs to the distributor. Distributors may have layers under him. So he may also have his own network established, either wholesaler or other commission agents, etc., to sell the goods, you know, be in touch with the customer, find customer so that he is able to also pump out the goods faster. Distributors are geared to offer, and today they are geared up to not only promote goods on their own, but also offer after sales support. Okay. They may take your help, technical and other learning, training, etc. But they are today ready mentally. Now the setup has emerged where they know that after sales is very crucial. So they have also geared up for that. However, they may charge you more as their role is much larger than the agent. And if it includes after sales, etc., the higher commission is expected from you. So that's about distributor. The third, last but not the least, is your firm itself. When you are as a firm entering into the market and those options that were available to you so far, whatever the options that we have discussed, agent, distributor, joint venture, export, direct exports, indirect exports, etc., manufacturing contract or management contract, etc., all this thing is under you. Now, you as a firm, what is your market entry strategy? So you also have to take certain things to ensure successful entry level strategy. So the firm who's deciding to export must conduct adequate research. So research is an essential thing to obtain a lot of insights about the market, about the network, about the agent or the party that whom you think are you going to deal with. Firm must be stable. They should be able to check the stability of the agent, distributor, they should have a complete knowledge about the product, the management competency with the party that you are going to work with. That's also, party is involved, whether agent, distributor, manufacturing or a management contract, joint venture, all this thing is involving a second party. So this is very relevant. Gaining the cross references and reference checks. You must do the reference check of the party with whom you are going to deal in. There are experts who provide this support. Speak to several agents, distributors to know the networking challenges, etc. Maybe understand their strategic approach and all. So you may have to get into a lot of interactive sessions, etc. First, must seek the trade reference. Trade reference is to know from others the authenticity of the other party, get credit checks done through the banks and all. You will have to also have very good knowledge of the competition. So competitor, their way of working, what is their market share, how are they competing with other competitors, etc. So entire operation knowledge of their networking strategies, etc., their supply chain, whatnot, you know. So that you need to really find out. Must have, therefore, a complete market knowledge. What is the potential to who is there in the market, with what market share, their marketing approach, their product marketing mix, etc. So all those aspects should be known to you. Must know the market first end. So as it is said, the conclusive part is, he should know thoroughly the market in that other country. So that firm who's now venturing into the foreign market, so as a firm, your entry level strategy requires you to do so many other aspects. That is what has been we just discussed. Okay, so with this we end this chapter. This chapter was essentially about your market entry strategies and gave you various options. My recommendation is that entry level strategy is the crux of this chapter. Focus on that. Thank you very much.